But with that said, the previous program is Economic Update with Richard Wolf, heard Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. right after the WBAI Evening News. Stay tuned for Off the Hook. It is 7 p.m. Stay tuned.
We're sorry. The number you have reached, 99.5 WBAI, is now off the hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if we could, we would. Only the bombs took our best.
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, coming in loud and clear.
Yeah, we are. And over in Skype land, we have Gila.
Hello.
Looking at your phone. And Rob T. Firefly.
Hello. Gila, give me your phone. It's my turn.
And not on a train this week is Alex.
Good evening. Hopefully coming in a little bit clearer.
We can hear you this week. What a marvelous turn of events that is. Alex, I take it when you were on that train heading back from Washington, D.C., you were actually finishing up protesting outside the homes of various Supreme Court justices? Is that, am I reading you right?
No, as a matter of fact, I was not. That wasn't on my agenda for
golden
that.
Golden opportunity right there, you know?
I imagine that most of them don't live in D.C. proper anyhow. I'm not sure about that. Well, maybe they do.
They live in Chevy Chase, Maryland, Alexandria, Virginia. I can give you the addresses later. That's not a problem. You could book your next ticket down there. But no, you know, I was actually, I was talking to a bunch of people who were part of that, you know, the Republicans are going nuts about this. They're saying that these people, why aren't they being arrested? It turns out there's a law. There's a law against protesting outside a judge's home. Did you know about this, Alex? As a lawyer, you should know about this, because I'm sure many times you've been tempted to just get a couple of picket signs and go outside a judge's house after they rule against one of your cases.
Yeah, well, that so rarely happens that I get ruled against.
Yeah, well, you might want to get used to it. You know, we have some dark days ahead, from what I'm led to believe.
Yeah. No doubt. No. In all fairness, yeah, it would sound somewhat appealing, given the posture of some of my cases several years ago. But yeah, I was unaware of this law. So tell us more about it.
It's USC 18, subsection 1507. You do well to read it. Whoever, with the intent of interfering with, obstructing, or impeding the administration of justice, or with the intent of influencing any judge, juror, witness, or court officer in the discharge of his duty, pickets or parades in or near a building housing a court of the United States or in or near a building or residence occupied or used by such judge, juror, witness, or court officer, or with such intent uses any sound truck, I don't know why they picked that, sound truck, or similar device or resorts to any other demonstration in or near any such building or residence, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. That's the law.
Well, it's interesting. It seems like it's tied to the intent to influence a judge's opinion one way or the other in an active case.
Isn't that what you do every day in court?
Yes, that's exactly what we do every day in court. Yeah. Yeah. But it also reminds me of way back when, I mean, God, I don't even remember what year this was, but it was probably before 2000 when we held a protest outside the U.S. Federal District Court, the Southern District of New York.
Oh, my God, you're right. We did that. We demonstrated outside a courthouse.
That's right.
That was in what year was that? Do you remember?
That's what I'm saying. I don't remember. It was a long time ago.
Okay, it was a very long time ago. It was last century, wasn't it? It was 1990. The statute of limitations has to be passed on that.
Oh, it certainly has. But
we're sorry. We're sorry for expressing our opinion in federal buildings or in front of federal buildings.
I don't think that we would have violated that particular statute because there wasn't an active case or controversy before the court in front of which we were demonstrating.
That's true. Demonstrating for Kevin Mitnick, who was held in a very distant court.
That's correct. Right. So I think that we were okay to be in front of the Southern District when there was a case in front of a separate U.S. federal district court.
But, you know, the thing that bothers me about this is that people really buy into the fear factor and say that, oh, my God, this is against the federal law to be outside someone's house chanting. And you know what? It might be. This law seems to make it seem that way. It seems to make it seem like if you're anywhere where there's a judge, you could be violating the law. And I say, so what? You know, at a time like this, where the Constitution is being dismantled, where you're having rights for the first time taken away by a Supreme Court, it's time to get angry. It's time to act. It's time to say, I'm going to express myself. Law be damned. If that's the kind of law that exists now, then the law is wrong, too. There are people outside the homes of those justices that are apparently intent on dismantling Roe versus Wade and throwing the country back half a century, at least, and just making life hell for so many people. And no, I don't think we should stay quiet for that. Of course we should vote. Of course we should change things down the road. But you see, you know, if we just rely on our elected officials, you get more of what happened today in the Senate, where absolutely nothing got accomplished. Basically, the same old people voted against doing anything of substance, and we just wind up saying, well, the Republicans beat us again, even though there is less of them. So, yeah, you know, don't be intimidated. If somebody says, let's go to a demonstration outside Clarence Thomas's house, take them up on it. You know, be loud, be abrasive. Don't be violent, don't be breaking things or vandalizing. That's not what this is about. It's about expressing yourself. You should never, ever be afraid to express yourself. And, you know, also, this is kind of funny because I was helping people basically find houses because, you know, it's kind of a detective work sort of a thing. It's not hard. It's not that hard because there's always information somewhere online linking people to certain places. But the thing that got me, the thing that was really, really funny about this, the way to confirm where a Supreme Court justice lives, let's say you have the street or the neighborhood, you just go on Google Maps and you move around a little bit and you keep looking at the houses. And when you get the house that's all blurred out, that's their house every time. It's simply incredible. Another time, once I got the address, I just plugged the address into the internet, and I got a nice Zillow video, a tour of their entire home inside and out, just left online. And the great thing is, at the end, there was a realtor who was narrating. He said, if you're excited seeing this online, you'll be thrilled when you see it in person. If that's not an invitation, I don't know what is.
Well, look, I think, I don't think we should advocate for people breaking law. I think, to play devil's advocate here, too, I mean, as a lawyer, judges really are supposed to restrict themselves to the consideration of things that are part of the record, the testimony, the evidence that the parties adduce, things like that. And this law seems to be designed to try to insulate the judiciary, in particular the federal judiciary, from undue influence outside of the record, meaning, you know, people going and shouting things or presenting evidence that might be hearsay or evidence that might be inadmissible in court. And so you have these very, very strict rules of evidence about what a judge can and cannot consider. And I think that this law actually does serve a purpose, so that if we start saying things like you did, Emmanuel, you know, in times like these, we should begin ignoring the law, I think you're just inviting anarchy.
We should ignore those laws that work against us and are unfair. You know, every fascist society of every era always had the law behind them. They always were able to point to that. 12 Years a Slave, watching that movie, you realize how the slaveholders always pointed to the law to say, I'm within my rights to have this person bound and enslaved indefinitely. So, yeah, the law is often flawed, and when it is, you have to challenge it. You don't simply blindly obey. And, you know, I think maybe because of the magnitude of what has happened here, people will see that, and they'll realize that there are, you know, values, and then there are laws that thwart those values. And in times like that, you have to speak up. You have to be loud. You have to be out there. But at the same time, you know, your values dictate that you don't hurt people, you don't break things, you don't break into people's homes or anything like that. It's not what anyone I know is advocating. But certainly, how do you express yourself otherwise? What's left? It really becomes frustrating, and that's a very unhealthy society if you're not able to speak freely. That's Vladimir Putin's society, and I certainly don't want that here. Rob, looks like you have something to say.
Yeah, just one point that I've seen made a number of different ways by a lot of people out there is the very fact that the people in power are telling you, no, you're protesting the wrong way. That in itself, I think, is a pretty solid sign that you're protesting in exactly the right way.
Mm-hmm.
You're protesting in the way that gets their attention. That, you don't want to quietly just, are you comfortable with this? I'm going to just protest you now. Okay. No, I think this is a sign that the protests are having an effect, are being heard.
Well, looking to that point, I think, you know, civil disobedience is a long and very storied history in this country, you know, especially with respect to things like the civil rights movement. We wouldn't be here if people were not ignoring the law and flaunting the law and disobeying the law. I mean, you even go back to, you know, the union miner strikes. You know, people like Utah Phillips would remind us that, you know, the reason why we have 8-hour days and laws busting sweatshops and busting child labor, these weren't benevolent gifts from enlightened management. They were fought for, bled for, died for on illegal picket lines. And so I agree with all of what you're saying, but I think as part of civil disobedience, you know, there is the component of punishment, and that breaking the law comes with a penalty. And when you disobey the law like that, even in a civil way, part of that protest is to accept the punishment that's meted out.
Yeah, but we're already living the punishment. That's the thing that people are protesting.
Yeah, in some degree, these laws are giving the current court a lot of shelter in a moment when the application isn't necessarily with what the majority has in mind for society, and they do have a right to redress their grievances and so forth. And by, and knowing the law, you can work sort of around the strictures of it in whatever kind of action you feel you're going to take. And we all know that laws themselves are interpreted by the public actually sort of along a continuum. I mean, most people follow them in a sort of the common, widely interpreted way, but instances like crossing against a pedestrian signal, there are signals and laws and technical things that we don't necessarily always abide by. And in this case, someone is there is power being exercised against the will of many people with lots of grievances to redress and give shelter to that process that of them voicing that. there may be people that are going to want to work out around the strictures of that law and perhaps in moments outside a little bit to get the point across, right? And so that's what I'm seeing and hearing in this.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you see on the right-wing media this law being trotted out, it means that the people showing up and protesting, holding signs, chanting, it's scaring them. It's scaring them a lot. So they have to find something that's really never been enforced before to try and scare people away from doing this in the first place. Because, you know, unlike what we're constantly being told, and we're told this from people on our side and on other sides, that our voices mean nothing. And, you know, the people that we agree with who tell us that, they're frustrated. They don't believe that it's ever going to work. They've been out in the streets so many times. They voted, and still nothing seems to change. So that's why they believe that doing this is pointless. Whereas the people on the other side, they don't want you to do that because you're a threat to their way of life, which they are succeeding in enforcing on the rest of us. Either way, you can't listen to that. Listen to yourself and do what feels right. And use the values that you hold dear, I think that's the best way forward. Kila.
Thank you. I just want to throw this out there very quickly, which is if you have a voice and you want to use it, there are actions, there are protests that are planned this weekend all across the country. Find the one in your local area. Get out there. Make some noise. There are protests this weekend. There's a massive thing happening in Washington next week. Find out. Be heard. Be part of this. Don't sit and be silent and stew.
Now, do you have the website? If you don't, we'll find it. Because we were talking about this last night as well. It's, I think, Planned Parenthood Action or something like
that. Planned Parenthood Action, yes. Okay. And they will actually, if you go there, they will direct you to your local event. For those people who are in the New York City area, which is probably everybody who's listening to us right now, the event is starting in Cadman Plaza, going to march over the Brooklyn Bridge and finish at Foley Square. Join us at noon. Go to PlannedParenthoodAction.org to find your local information this weekend, all over the country.
And when I looked at the site, there's a little dialogue box for you to enter your zip code. It didn't say zip code, but I figured it out. But enter your zip code there, and it'll tell you where the nearest demonstration is. And Gila, you mentioned something is happening next week nationwide. That's not this weekend.
Not nationwide. There's actually something happening a week from yesterday, next Tuesday, in Washington. Actually, mostly focused on the Jewish community, but in Washington, sponsored by National Council of Jewish Women, among other organizations. You can find out more at ncjw.org. I know of at least one chartered bus that's going from New York to Washington for this event next week.
And keep listening to WBAI because we are your source for information about this and all sorts of other activities that are going on related to this and so many other things that are happening. WBAI is really a tremendous source for that. And by the way, I should point out, please help support us. Keep us on the air because we don't have commercials. And we piss off a lot of powerful people, and they're constantly trying to shut us down, constantly. Give to WBAI.org. That's give the number to WBAI.org, or you can call 212-209-2950. And if there are people there, just say, I want to pledge a certain amount, and they'll find a thank you gift that's appropriate for that amount.
Stay plugged in, stay invigorated, and thanks for sharing that information, Gila, about actions in everybody's locality, and of course the information you had about laws, and you know the risks. Stay safe out there,
mm-hmm.
But don't wait or feel like you're alone. There are so many people that have taken immediate notice and
right.
are mobilizing.
Yeah, I think that's important. Don't feel like you're alone because you're not. Even if you are physically alone, even if you're in a some desolate place on earth and you feel like no one's with you, we are. And we can get together in all different ways, online, offline. The important thing is to act intelligently and to stay true to your own beliefs. Hackers break the rules a lot. You know, we get into trouble because of that. And it takes the form of many actions, many experiments. Here's one that took place on Monday. Hackers replaced Russian TV schedules during Vladimir Putin's Victory Day parade. You guys watch the Victory Day parade?
I missed it.
Oh, it's fabulous. It's worth seeing. A lot of tanks, a lot of trucks, a lot of people marching around. You know, we talked about this on the other radio show yesterday, but everybody's walking and looking to the right as they walk, you know, looking at the leader. I don't understand how they're able to keep walking straight without tripping over each other. I certainly don't know how they're able to drive tanks and massive vehicles while staring to the right, which they do. Alex, I know you have some military experience. Maybe you understand how that works.
Well, yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I find the whole Victory Day thing fascinating, though, because, you know, this was victory over the Nazis we were talking about.
The original, not the OG Nazis, yeah.
Yeah, the Nazis, mm-hmm. right? I mean, not neo-Nazis, not anything like that. And so you have this almost co-opting of Victory Day over the last several years with Vladimir Putin, and it becoming more and more militaristic, more jingoistic, more about these external threats that are facing Russia, you know, and revisiting this whole notion of the threat of Nazis that they've then misused and abused through misinformation, propaganda, censorship, and a strict enforcement regime domestically to justify the war in Ukraine. And it is really, really unfortunate. I think it was I don't remember who it was from the UK, but one of the ministers from the United Kingdom had called it out and said, you know, it's really unfortunate because, you know, Russia and the Soviet Union, in fact, you know, held this really important place in helping to defeat the Nazis. I mean, it was they who were instrumental and critical to the fall of the Nazi regime.
That's true.
Yet they themselves are committing these atrocities that are going to tarnish and stain forever that historical mark that they left on the world with the defeat of the Nazis.
The amount of people that Russia lost, or the Soviet Union at the time lost during World War II, I think it's something like 20 million.
27 million.
Unfathomable for us. Yeah. At that time, not that I was around for it, but at that time, there was a certain camaraderie between Americans and Soviets at that moment where the war was over because of our combined efforts. And, yeah, a lot of that has been lost, forgotten, tarnished, and, on both sides, too. I mean, what Russia is doing is absolutely terrible at the moment, but our hands are not clean by any stretch. Anyway, to get to what happened on Monday, so Russian television schedules were hacked to display an anti-war message as the country celebrated the National Military Festival. On-screen program descriptions, we all have those now, they were replaced with the hacker's text when viewed on smart TVs. How do we do this, folks? I really would love to be able to do that here. We'd probably be in prison for life, but still, it's a worthy hack. According to BBC Monitoring, that sounds very Orwellian, doesn't it? But I guess BBC is out there and they're just watching what we're doing. The message read, "On your hands is the blood of thousands of Ukrainians and their hundreds of murdered children. TV and the authorities are lying. No to war." That is the most magnificent statement. And yes, I'm sure it violates all sorts of laws, but I am very happy that somebody had the courage to do that and very thankful. Major channels such as Russia 1, Channel 1, and NTV Plus were changed. Francis Scar, who works for BBC Monitoring, which is, it's defined here, the branch of the BBC that follows mass media worldwide, they tweeted a short video of a screen showing the TV schedules on which every program showed the same description. The hack came during Russia's Victory Day celebrations, which is a national holiday and military parade overseen by Vladimir Putin, which was being televised all throughout Russia. As we mentioned, the annual event celebrates the Soviet Union's victory alongside Allied forces over Nazi Germany in 1945. Under a near blackout of independent media and social media platforms, which exist today, most Russian viewers can access only Kremlin-controlled messaging about the conflict in Ukraine. The message in Monday's hack runs deeply counter to Putin's claims that his forces are in Ukraine to, quote-unquote, liberate Russian-speaking Ukrainians. It's unclear who was behind the alteration of the schedules on Monday, but the hacker group Anonymous retweeted a message saying, good morning, Moscow, within hours of the hack. So, not really an organized group, just a lot of people pooling resources and accomplishing incredible things. And then you have Anonymous NB65, their affiliated network battalion, NB65. They allegedly targeted a Russian payment processing platform known as Kiwi, Q-I-W-I, and leaked 7 million payment cards as proof of a hack. This happened on May 1st, and they're defined by this story in hackread.com as one of the Anonymous affiliate hacktivist groups. They published a tweet in which they claimed to have gained access to Kiwi's databases for Operation Op Russia. For further information, Kiwi is a Russian giant that provides, a giant company, I imagine, that provides payment and financial services in Russia and the Commonwealth Independent States. Those are countries that were former Soviet republics. NB65 is the same group that hacked Russian state-run television and radio broadcaster VGTRK, which is also known as All Russia State Television and Radio Broadcasting Company. That happened back in April, and they also leaked 786 gigabytes worth of data online, something we discussed here. As for the attack on Kiwi, NB65 also tweeted that it managed to extract 10.5 terabytes of data, comprising 30 million payment records, and they filtered 12.5 million credit cards of Kiwi customers. They also posted a statement revealing that the attack was aimed at disrupting the Russian financial system, in case you couldn't figure that out. Here's what they said. Kiwi, in your last press release, you clearly stated that the sanctions against the Russian financial system did not affect your business in any way. Well, it will definitely affect your business. Signed, NB65-Anonymous. They also stated they encrypted the platform's networks with a ransomware kit. Furthermore, the group threatened to release 1 million records every day after the three-day contract period expires and the platform fails to reach out to them. So, Kiwi, reach out to NB65. They're trying to reach you and not answering. It's important, and you're going to lose a million records every day, and your business will be affected quite a bit. You know, I'm not a fan of ransomware or vandalism of this sort, but in certain situations, You go with what you got, and this seems like an effective way to show outrage and kind of mess up the system a bit. Thoughts?
Yeah, like in situations where there's persistent action that is really not, that's running unabated, that is not being deterred, and it just basically it comes down to maybe helping that attacker change their priorities a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're good, you can protect yourself against this sort of thing. It sounds like they're not that good. And that's how these things happen. Now, of course, it happens in both directions, too. The Russian hacking group Killnet. Wow, whatever happened to Fluffy Puppy and, you know, the nice-sounding names that we used to have? Now it's Killnet. They threatened to shut down ventilators at British hospitals. They don't waste time, do they? They're just going to go for the ventilators and shut them down. But this is in retaliation for the arrest of an alleged member. So try to stay to catch up here, because this is nothing to do with what I was talking about before. A 23-year-old supposed Killnet member was arrested in London on Monday for the attack on Romanian government websites. This gets complicated. Killnet has reportedly demanded his release and threatened to target life-saving ventilators in British hospitals if their demands aren't met. The message said, if he is not released within 48 hours, I will destroy your Romania, Great Britain, and Moldova. Yeah. I'm not sure why Moldova got thrown in there. I will destroy your entire information structure and even your Ministry of Health. All ventilators will be attacked. Only then will you begin to realize the mistake you have made. Seems pretty serious there. The alleged Killnet member was reportedly arrested by National Crime Agency officers alongside officials from Romania. That raid took place at an address in Tottenham, North London. Go Spurs. where the hacker was detained on suspicion of assisting with KillNet's attacks on the Romanian government and media earlier this week in retaliation for supporting Ukraine in the Russian invasion. So it all comes back to Ukraine in the end, I suppose. The hacker is reportedly a Putin supporter with Facebook posts emblazoned with Russian flags and the letter Z, which is the invasion symbol that you see on Russian tanks. So, yeah, you know, it's just madness and mayhem out there. But what I wonder, and I always come back to this, why are ventilators accessible online in the first place? Do they need to be? It seems like a fairly simple way to keep them safe is to not have them be able to be hacked in the first place. You know, maybe I'm naive, but I just don't see why that needs to be something that the whole world should be able to alter.
Yeah, that's alarming. Really, truly impressive. And if it is a capability they're wielding and kind of really trying to get people to take pause and you know, confront.
Both Rob and Alex look equally thoughtful. I'm not sure which one is more thoughtful at the moment. Rob, let's go to you.
Yeah, I'm wondering the same thing. I'm wondering, you know, if there's someone at a ventilator company somewhere who had that eureka moment of going, you know what we should do? We should put this damn thing on the net. Yeah, that would be a great idea.
I just don't see the advantage. I mean, are people not going into work that are, you know, keeping people alive? You think you show up in person for that, right?
I could see some system that works in conjunction being vulnerable. I don't know.
Go ahead, Rob.
I just, you know, Gila, I want to let you know that this is my medical wish, that if I ever end up on a ventilator, like, pay extra if you need to get one that's not internet controllable.
Turn off the Wi-Fi.
The Internet of Things respirator.
Turn off the Wi-Fi on your respirator. I think that's a good rule. Go ahead, Alex.
Sorry, I was at a Skype foul there. I was on mute. I mean, how else are you going to, you know, remotely monitor your, you know, your battery and breathing rates and all these? You know, aren't you curious about that when you're not on the ventilator?
Here's the thing. You can monitor things. You know, like I look out the window, I see the moon rising, but I can't control it. I can't change the moon. I can notice the moon. I can say, hey, there's a nice moon out there. And I can call you, Alex, and say, Alex, look out the window. Look at the moon. And we can both be looking at the moon, except maybe you have more power over the moon and you can do something. Similarly, I can call the hospital and say, hey, you know, Dr. Intern or whatever, can you please change the setting on this since you're there and I'm not? I can see it, but I can't change it. And simple things like that.
I mean, what fun is, you know, life-enabling hardware if it doesn't have aged firmware?
You're right. I take all the fun out of hospitals, I know.
Oh, yeah.
I've worked in multiple places that had, like, air-gapped intranets where something needed to be networked, but they didn't want it to be accessible from outside, so it was just an internal-only network, and that was, you know, that was just protecting data. There were no lungs connected to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's common sense. I think, you know, we all came up in the BBS era, and I think a lot of kids had better security than major hospitals and corporations have today. And I think that continues, too. I think a lot of kids running their system probably have better security.
Please, write us at OTH if you know about vulnerabilities like this, because I think this is still exaggeration. What were you going to say?
You didn't finish the email address.
OTH at 2600.com.
Yes,
sorry.
It's important to finish the email address. Go ahead, Alex.
What were you going to say, Alex?
I have a, you know, maybe I should just write in with this information perhaps, but I have found an article from 2016 here about Philips, and there is this trilogy of portable ventilators that are slated to be connected to something called a care orchestrator, which is connected to a care management application. And the Care Orchestrator program appears to be a cloud-connected health app designed to connect informatics and intelligence information for providers, payers, and patients alongside clinical management workflow information. So, you know, there's quite a few mouthfuls for you there, to, you know, justifying what was a really horrible idea. 6 years ago, nearly 6 years ago, it was when they had the idea of putting ventilators in cloud, on the internet via cloud connected apps.
That is something. As if you don't have enough to worry about going on a ventilator in the first place, but being hacked shouldn't be one of them. Yeah, okay. If you know more things like that, as Kyle said, write to us, oth@2600.com. Hope update, today we announced virtual ticketing. You can be an attendee at the conference without coming to the conference if you feel more secure doing that. And I know a lot of people are still a little wary of traveling and wary of being with other people. I get it. You might actually be a speaker, too, that feels more comfortable putting in something that is remote. We're in a transitional period. I know it's not going to be back to 100%. It's going to be great for those of us who are there. I believe it'll be an historic moment. It'll be a new location for us at St. John's University. But I don't want to exclude people who can't make it for whatever reason. So we, on our website, just check it out, hope.net and 2600.com. There's information on how to participate in various ways, virtually as well as in person. And we're going to have a lot more information in the days and weeks ahead with speakers, talks, activities that we're going to be announcing. It's really, it's shaping up. Full details at hope.net. Now we have this interesting update that we got from a few different people. Apparently, if you type the following, and each and should be a capital A and have a period after the D. So five instances of the word and with a capital A and a period at the end. If you do that in Google Docs, according to this Yahoo article, that will completely crash your Google Doc page. Apparently, it'll crash it permanently, too. Wow. Engadget was able to confirm the issue on a, I don't know why the size of the monitor matters, a 16-inch 2019 MacBook Pro running Monterey 12.3.1 and Google Chrome 100.0.4896.127, and we were summarily greeted by the something went wrong popover, as well as its loathsome cousin unable to load file. Reloading the page as prompted results in the same popovers, in effect a death loop. Attempts to replicate the issue on Firefox 99.0.1. Isn't it weird that both Firefox and Chrome are at 100 at this point? 100 releases. On a significantly older and worse MacBook Pro, you know, maybe it's the Macs that's the problem. Everyone's running Macs. This one's running Big Sur 11.1. That was not successful, but a respondent on the Google support forums claims to have experienced the same problem on the same version of Firefox. So what exactly is happening remains a mystery, though the reporter on Yahoo reached out for clarity on what is likely a small, if amusing, technical oversight. How this bug was even discovered is itself an enigma. Apparently, it was part of somebody's poem. He wrote a poem that happened to have the word "and" written twice in just that format. It really is something. Don't do that then. If you have a Google Docs document, apparently you'll run into some regrettable problems where you won't be able to access your document anymore. Anybody out in Skype line want to try this?
Actually, we've been trying this while you were reading the story, and it is fixed now. So sadly, you cannot explode your Google Docs by typing this in a document. Now, there was an update to the Google bug, the Google support page about the bug on May 6th, where they say, "We have fixed an issue in Docs related to repetitive use of the word and. This fix should soon be in place for all customers." So, yes, this was taken care of. But my favorite thing about this story is that one of the links we got sent to us about this was a news story on Yahoo.com. And I'm sure someone at Yahoo was very happy to press the button on a story about something messing up at Google, the very company that ate Yahoo's lunch so many years ago on the Internet.
Yeah, well, the update I was reading was May 5th, 6 p.m. So, May 6th, they fixed it. Okay, well, good for them. But, boy, I don't know how these things happen in the first place. another reason I don't use Google Docs. Okay, Twitter. I guess we got to talk about Twitter. Because what Elon Musk said recently is that he plans on reversing Twitter's ban of Donald Trump. He said he would do that, assuming that he follows through with the plans to buy the social media company. I don't think there's any way out of it now, right? It's pretty much happening. He spoke virtually at a Future of the Car summit hosted by the Financial Times. He said Twitter's Trump ban was a morally bad decision and foolish in the extreme. He said permanent bans of Twitter accounts should be rare and reserved for accounts that are scams or automated bots. Scam? Hello? Were you in the country during those 4 years? That was a scam. That was President Scam right there. It fits the definition in so many ways. Twitter banned Trump's account in January 2021. For incitement of violence following the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. Musk said, you know, I don't care what Musk says or thinks, but unfortunately we're all going to be at his beck and call, you know, because he's the one that will be making the rules. I think that was a mistake because it alienated a large part of the country and did not ultimately result in Donald Trump not having a voice. Actually, it really calmed things down quite a bit. I don't know if people remember what it was like when he was taken off Twitter, but all of a sudden there was a lot less hatred on the Internet. It did have an effect. Musk continues, so I think this may end up being, frankly, worse than having a single forum where everyone can debate. I guess the answer is that I would reverse the permanent ban. Now, Trump said he has no intention of rejoining Twitter, even if his account was reinstated, saying that he's going to stay on whatever platform he's running this week. I think it's Truth Social is the latest one. Get this. Musk also says that Twitter currently has a strong bias to the left, largely because it is located in San Francisco. I mean, where do you get this nonsense? How do you have a bias to the left simply because you kick people off who are inciting violence or running scams, who are spreading lies? Maybe it's because a particular a political ideology is doing that more than another, you know, and not so much because the entire platform somehow, like all journalists are accused of doing, is slanted to the left. Maybe the left is more straight ahead than you think it is, and these people, entities that are running afoul of the rules are basically peddling lies and things that really we shouldn't be spreading around. Here's where I have a problem. If I go on Twitter and I say something that's false, nobody really is going to care. You know, a half a dozen people maybe. I'll get called on it by a couple of people. If somebody with 10 million followers, if they start spreading lies, well, then it catches. Then it becomes dangerous, especially if it's, you know, incitement or spreading complete falsehoods. You cannot simply say everybody's got the same rights because you don't, by definition. We don't all have the same audience. And if you have everything from institutions to individual people with massive amounts of influence, just basically being able to spread whatever falsehoods they want unquestioned, and they will be unquestioned because, you know, if anyone here says something to question them, no one's going to hear about it. They only hear about the people with millions and millions of followers. If that becomes the norm, where everybody has the same rights but very, very different amounts of power, then it's simply going to be one set of lies. And maybe some powerful people will debate those lies, but it's not a healthy environment. Alex, I'm sure you want to play devil's advocate on this.
Well, I think what you are advocating for here, in a sense, is something more akin to algorithmic transparency as opposed to some kind of rebalancing of speech rights on a platform. Because really, I think in essence what you're driving at there was about, you know, the power or the amplification of certain persons' speech over or opposed to other persons. I think as a matter of free speech, though, I think, frankly, both the right and the left have it wrong. I think on the right, maybe their pants are a little bit too tight, and on the left, you know, maybe they, you know, these long-haired hippies have to grab a scrunchie and get the hair out of their eyes. Because what we're talking about here is the First Amendment as it applies to a private institution, Twitter. Twitter is a corporation. In the eyes of the law, Twitter is, for better or for worse, a person with its own First Amendment rights. And it is a matter of the First Amendment that they can establish their own standards, their own community standards, and determine on the basis of their freedom of speech what they want to publish and what they want to not publish, mm-hmm. what they want to limit. So, I mean, if we think about this very fundamentally, Twitter's free speech rights should not be infringed by the government, forcing these types of community standards upon them from on high. You know, as was recently just done, I think this is probably something, well, we should address in overtime, but there was a Texas law that was enjoined, meaning there was an injunction preventing this law from going into effect that I believe, I think it's the Fifth Circuit now has reversed this law and allowed it now to take effect, which prohibits social media companies and I think anybody with over 50 million followers, any kind of web service with over 50 million users, rather, from discriminating on the basis of viewpoint what is and what is not published, and which is just totally crazy. I mean, when you think about how much the right loves to throw in our face the rights of corporations to do whatever they want, the rights of corporations to not pay taxes, the rights of corporations to do this, that, and the other thing. Well, corporations have First Amendment rights, too. So, I mean, I really think, you know, we should explore this new regulation, I think, in more detail in overtime. And not forget that, you know, really, at root, we have to be fair when it comes to the First Amendment.
Overtime begins at 8 o'clock on YouTube. It's on channel 2600. You can click on the link on the 2600.com webpage or on our Twitter account. We're going to be on the air until 8 o'clock. Go ahead, Gila.
That was what I was going to say, actually. Thank you for bringing that up, Alex. Emmanuel, when you noticed I was on my phone at the beginning of the show, I was looking at an article about this decision. It was literally breaking news. An article was published 10 minutes before we went on the air. So I was reading it, and that was what you caught me doing. I apologize.
Wow.
And I sent it to everybody, or I sent it to Rob, who sent it to everybody because he can email better than I can. But it was fascinating, and the Fifth Circuit enjoined it, but there's a similar law in Florida that is still – what's the word I'm looking for? Enjoined.
Yes.
And thank you. No, it's fascinating what's going to happen. And this is, I think, an interesting question. But the other thing I was thinking about Elon Musk, and this has less to do with technology and certainly less to do with law, was remember when people who were like having midlife crises after breakups just went and bought a fancy car and they didn't buy a social media service? That's all I'm thinking. Like, could he not do something less publicly destructive and publicly problematic? Like, I don't know, can't he get a tattoo or something in his midlife crisis?
I just keep thinking, how is it that he's got to be the guy that's going to fix it?
Because he has this naive viewpoint that he's the savior, that he understands what free speech is and the rest of us don't.
Okay,
we
yeah.
get it. We know what free speech is. We just don't want that version of it because it's disruptive. It's, you know, it's naive. It's basically saying, oh, everyone's opinion is the same when it's not, okay? It's like you know, discussions happen after every news story that you read online where people who don't know what they're talking about are given basically equal exposure to the person who wrote the damn article in the first place and researched it and did all the work. You know, and then you have some idiot who's writing from you know, their house, no, this is all false. This is stupid. And they don't have any facts to back them up. But yet, we're told that we have to listen to them just as carefully. I don't believe that. I believe, you know, you earn the right to be respected as a source, and that we're not all on the same playing field. We define what that field is. Go ahead, Gila.
Something that I've been speaking about a lot in really the last 20 years, I would guess, is that really since the growth of reality TV, that there's come this idea that if you say it louder and more often, you win the argument. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if your argument is sound. It doesn't matter if your argument is true. But if you say it more loudly and more frequently, then you win. And it doesn't matter where it's coming from. It doesn't matter what it's about. And I think about all the people who are like, oh, do your research when you talk about vaccines or whatever. I read an article on Google. I know what I'm talking about. I didn't go to medical school, but I did my research. No. It's someone I knew aggregated 120 articles about vaccines. And I said, your college major was Spanish. What are you doing?
And you know who did do the research? The researchers, the scientists, the medical people, the experts in whatever field that you are pretending you know something about. I'm all for sharing theories and ideas and arguing, you know, but when the people who don't know what they're talking about become the dominant voice, then you have a situation like what we have right now in this country where a bunch of ignorant people are leading us down some very dark roads. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, talking about doing the research and not getting good info, I'm looking at quotes from the judges in this Texas case that let this bad rule get put back in place. And they're telling the NetChoice and Computer and Communications Industry Association, which represents Twitter and Meta and Google and places like that, the judge told them, your clients are internet providers. They're not websites. At one point, Judge Andrew Oldham suggested that if the platform succeeded, it would be the same as allowing like Verizon to kick people off their service because they're getting very confused about the whole common carrier end of this, which does not exist anymore because the common carrier status thing was reversed by that was put in place by the Obama administration, was reversed by the Trump administration. So do with that knowledge what you will.
It's not the same thing at all. My God, they really don't know what they're talking about, do they?
No, phone companies are common carriers. You know, you could say whatever you want over a phone line, and the phone company is not allowed to discriminate against you for saying one thing or another over their service. But the social media companies are not common carriers, and they're being treated like they are by these judges.
Ah, yes. Oh, and we're now to look to them. Please tell us how to do culture right and discourse. We're obviously doing it wrong. So please enlighten us.
Alex, in 1 minute, because that's all the time we have left, what can happen with this case? Is it the final word, or can it be can smart people take
Sure. As Gila noted, you know, there is now a circuit split on this, so I think it's very likely to go to the Supreme Court. But remember, you know, in dismissing a case as moot last year, Justice Clarence Thomas, of all people, had in that dismissal, what is usually two or three lines, written a long opinion that we discussed at length here on Off the Hook that essentially argued that Twitter was or should be regulated as a common carrier because it does have aspects of some kind of public forum. I think that that is an interesting idea because we have litigated cases where Trump has blocked and banned people and said that was unconstitutional from the perspective of the user. So how we are dealing with these platforms, I think, remains to be seen. We're dealing with them in a legally inconsistent way. But unfortunately, I think most of these laws are performative in nature that come from these state legislatures. They're designed to galvanize the base. They're not designed to survive strict scrutiny by the courts. They're designed to just get people out to vote in midterm elections. They're going to be struck down.
All right, we're going to talk further about this on overtime. It's an interesting conversation. We're not afraid of speech. Speech is great. What I fear is the power that certain individuals will have to steer the rest of us in a very bad direction. Unimpeded, unchallenged, that is where the real danger is. Join us on overtime. Go to the link on top of 2600.com or just go to channel 2600 on YouTube. Write to us, OTH at 2600.com. Please support WBAI, give to WBAI.org or call 212-209-2950. This weekend is Euro 2022, Eurovision 2022, and that's where all kinds of songs are played from 40 different nations and a winner is chosen. There is only one song of the 40 that is, in my opinion, rock and roll. It comes from Bulgaria, and we're going to go out with that. Intelligent Music Project. Good night.
That's how I feel, striking her flames on and on.